listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly, alongside me, Chris Parrott, for your weekly European football podcast. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Well, the international break came to an end in dramatic fashion. Derby weekend everywhere, in Madrid, Istanbul and Milan. And we've got Italian football journalist Tancredi Palmeri on the show to speak about AC Milan against Inter. There was the Classica in Germany. But neither Bayern or Dortmund lead the Bundesliga, amazingly. We've got your Rubens, your highlights of the week. And there was a very touching moment for Feyenoord star man Tony Villena as well at the weekend. So an awful lot going on. Probably the busiest weekend in Europe this season, I think.
OK, Chris, before we get through all of that, and we're going to read out your tweets, thank you very much for sending them in at FIE Podcast, your European football highlights of the weekend. But Chris, it's time for Rubens.
Rubens, we still haven't got Sting.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'll get on the production of that.
Yeah, you do.
This week's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So the Sting would... Well, we'll talk about
we'll do a Rubens one. Oh, you want to do that Cars Chief thing, don't you?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Ruben, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, maybe we'll do that. So Rubens is a nice fact or piece of trivia or something about European football that me and Chris bring to the table every week. We've got one from a listener as well, which we'll read out in a moment.
I like the one from the listener.
Yeah, not bad.
Very good.
Yeah, I've not fact-checked it. So Stephen Johnston.
You better be right. What's yours?
Okay, so I've just, because it was Der Klassiker this weekend, and there were loads of derbies, I've just tried to find as many classic-named derbies as possible.
Yeah.
So we've got El Clasico, Barcelona versus Real Madrid, Le Classique, Marseille-PSG.
Yep.
Der Klassiker is Dortmund-Bayern, and I think Der Klassiker is also Standard Liège against Anderlecht.
I think it is.
I can't remember. Die Klassiker is Ajax against PSV Eindhoven. El Clasico is Zenit against CSKA Moscow, but we think that's a relatively new one, don't we?
I think that's because all the other ones are called Clasicos.
Yeah. O Clasico is Porto Benfica. El Clasic in Andorra.
No, what one mountain is Santa, versus the other?
Santa Coloma versus St. Julia. The Classic in Norway is Rosenborg versus SK Brann. El Super Clasico in Argentina. Chris?
Boca against River.
Correct. And the California Clasico is San Jose Earthquakes versus LA Galaxy.
That is the worst of the lot.
What's your Ruben, Chris?
Well, hang on. Just to come back to that, I quite like the fact that in British football, we don't call them. So it's the Old Firm.
Yeah, Old Firm, yeah.
And then it's just a London derby.
What would be, would Liverpool, Manchester United Liverpool, be the United, closest yeah. we could have to the Classic?
But that's just called Liverpool versus Manchester United.
Yeah, it's not got a name. Okay, Chris, give me your Ruben.
Mine actually also comes from the Dortmund versus Bayern game.
Okay.
So we hear a lot about this famous yellow wall, which helped Dortmund beat Bayern at the weekend. So what do you think the capacity of the terrace behind the goal at Dortmund is?
I don't know. So Signal Iduna Park is something like 80,000.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest stadiums in Europe. I would guess... Can they pack like 25 in there or something?
Oh, that's a good guess.
Is it?
24,454. Standing,
in one stand?
Standing behind the goal, and that is bigger than four stadiums in the Premier League, that being Watford, Burnley, Swansea and Bournemouth, as if those four are Premier League teams. And only
Ipswich bitterness.
Yes, and only just smaller than Crystal Palace, Hull and West Brom. The
My
whole ground.
Word. That's good.
That's big, isn't it?
Well done, Chris, this week.
How on earth do they all get in and out of there?
I have
quickly?
No idea. I'm off there next month, actually.
Yeah.
With David Goodwin.
Oh, my.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Mm. Excellent.
Stephen Johnston's Ruben this week. Stern John has two more international goals than Cristiano Ronaldo. Hashtag Rubens.
That's great, Ruben.
That's good. If it's do we trust Stephen?
Yeah, because Stern John played about a million times for his country.
Yeah.
I've seen Stern John score.
Have you? Tell me about it.
I can't particularly remember the goal, but he scored.
My God.
He played for about a billion clubs in the lower leagues.
Stern John, better than Ronaldo.
Official.
We'll be talking about Ronaldo's hat-trick against Atletico later on in the show. But Chris, it's time for the Bundesliga. And my word, things are tight in Germany.
Do we have a title race for the first time in years? Maybe.
We genuinely do. Since probably Dortmund last won the title.
Do you think we can say this early there's a title race?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And I say it because Well, Leipzig are top by 3 points after beating Bayer Leverkusen 3-2 in the Friday night game. So Leipzig, who we've talked about endlessly on this show, came back from 2-1 down. They also, Leverkusen missed a penalty to make it 3-1, and Leipzig went on to win the game. And Ralf Hasenhüttl ran on the pitch with his players. They were having a great time, and they're 3 points ahead of Bayern.
But a lot of people are very upset, and I think this is going to carry on, because now any team that isn't one of the traditional teams, for the rest of history, if they win the title, will have done a Leicester. And it's a cheap
This is bugging you, is it?
Journalism line. Well, I just think, I would imagine that the fans that don't like the fact they're owned by Red Bull and invested heavily in them and bankrolled by them, I don't think you can quite equate Leipzig's run to the top of the Bundesliga the same as Leicester City's run to the Premier League.
No, and I think also you look back to when Kaiserslautern were promoted and won the Bundesliga title, really.
Yeah.
Leicester did a Kaiserslautern.
Yeah.
Almost.
Exactly. But I think that they're not the plucky underdogs. They're not the traditional plucky underdogs.
No, they spent a lot of money and they've got good young players. It is very surprising that they're top of the league by 3 points, no question.
It is. But and that's partly because Carlo Ancelotti continues to struggle at Bayern. I mean, they lost to Dortmund. That's always their biggest game away from home, but they're certainly not as good as they were under Pep Guardiola.
No, and I saw almost all of the game in the end of Dortmund-Bayern. Bayern weren't bad, but there was an air of familiarity to the Atletico game, which I think we may have both watched together, that when they lost to Atletico this season, whereby they had most of the ball and were creating sort of half chances, had a goal disallowed for offside through Ribery, but Dortmund were very organised and they went with two up front almost in Aubameyang and Ramos. Aubameyang with the goal made by Goetze, playing against Bayern, of course. And it was very smart from Dortmund. They looked, by the end of it, they looked exhausted. but I think Ancelotti's 4-3-3 is a little flat. And Müller and Lewandowski in terms of goals, I don't think Müller's scored in the league this season.
No, he hasn't, which is interesting. Also, I wonder for... We watched Dortmund play against Real Madrid as well, and you felt that for a young team, that was an important point that they got at home, just to prove to themselves that, yeah, we can compete. Well, that's going to do them wonders, isn't it? To beat the team that's supposedly better than them and the title favourites, that, for a young team, is going to have to install an awful lot of confidence.
Yeah, you'd certainly hope so. And all those injured players are now starting to come back. There was talk that Marco Reus was going to be available for the first time this season, but he has a heel injury at the moment, and it meant he couldn't play. So, you know, you had Christian Pulisic at the end of the game running down time. You've got so many young, gifted players in there, and great atmosphere as always at Dortmund. I mean, but they lost to Bayern there in the Super Cup this year. So I think you're absolutely right. I think in terms of morale in that squad and belief in that squad, while their away form hasn't been that great, that was probably a massive, massive win.
And elsewhere in Germany, you've mentioned Leipzig top. Mönchengladbach beaten by Cologne in the other big derby, the Ruhr derby at the weekend. Beaten at home, Andre Schubert, I presume, is under a little
bit of pressure. Yeah, he is. And I think there's always been a few question marks about him. He's probably been in charge about 14 months now of Gladbach. And they play City this week in the Champions League, don't they? Yeah, I mean, they were leading. It's a very fierce derby with Cologne, famously. And they were 1-0 up Gladbach through Lars Stindl. And then Gladbach threw it away in the second half. Modest scoring again, one of Europe's in-form strikers, and Marcel Risser with a 35-yard free kick in the last minutes over Jan Sommer. Incredible strike, wasn't it? It was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. Three places above the relegation spots. 13th in the Bundesliga. Gladbach. I just had a look. One win in their last six. I mean, in terms of Manchester City supporters, when the draw was made, you thought, Celtic and particularly Gladbach, wow, that's tough. But actually, has it quite worked that way, has it?
And the other issue is Gladbach's strength was their form at home, and that's slipping. I mean, the derby defeat to Cologne, it was at Borussia Park.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, the other big result recently for Gladbach was that they drew at home to Celtic, having absolutely bossed them in Glasgow. And had they won that game, suddenly the City fixture would carry greater significance. But City probably What do you reckon? City will get through, won't they?
Yeah, they will, yeah.
It'll take a big turnaround for Gladbach to turn it around. And I want to point out, and it's good you point out that Gladbach are there in the table, because Wolfsburg, Schalke and Bayer are all in a similar position in the table. The conventional teams you'd expect to challenge. Here's the top of the Bundesliga table at the moment. So you've got Leipzig promoted on 27 points, then Bayern on 24. Then on 21 points, we have five teams. Dortmund, Cologne, Hoffenheim, Hertha and Frankfurt. So it's like an untraditional, well, not untraditional, but unconventional top seven in Germany this season. I think many were expecting Leverkusen to challenge for the league title as well, but they were flimsy against Leipzig on Friday.
Yeah, but also, I mean, so we talk about the title race, but in terms of third and fourth then for Champions League and fifth, sixth, seventh for Europa League?
Yeah, because normally fifth, sixth is Europa League, and seventh normally gets, because Bayern normally win the
cup. The cup, yeah. So suddenly you have these teams who may never have played in Europe before, or not for a long time, really have that chance. There's looking four unbeaten teams in the top five European leagues, and you mentioned two of them there, Leipzig and Hoffenheim. Would have got a lot of money back in August if you'd said that in the middle of November that they would be two of the four.
Yeah, it's an amazing season. And, you know, I don't think Leipzig quite, I've done them a couple of times and I'm contacting them on Friday. They go to Freiburg. I don't think there is quite the depth potentially. But it seems that not being in Europe is becoming more and more of a factor. I don't know, maybe I'm making this up in my head, but can you remember, I mean, you look at the teams like Liverpool and Chelsea doing very well this season, how fresh they look every week. You look at Leicester winning the title last season in the latter stages of the campaign, were unstoppable. And you look at the teams who are around Bayern and Dortmund, are any of them in Europe? I don't think so. Are Hertha in Europe?
No, they got knocked out in qualifying. Yeah, no, it's a very good point. And it's, you wonder whether sides increasingly, if they don't qualify for the Champions League spots, actually would be more than happy to finish one place outside of the Europa League. And that's not, I think the Europa League is a terrific competition, but I think if sides want a tilt at the title,
That's a great point, actually. That's the caveat. If you want to push for the title.
The title, yeah. If you think you're good enough to win the title.
Because Mainz are not going to win the title.
No.
But they're going to love the Europa League.
Yeah, and Liverpool and Chelsea are good enough to have a go at the title. Okay. They're not. Leicester City would be delighted to finish in the European places because they're not going to win the league again. Or maybe in Everton.
You know, sure.
Whereas Liverpool and Chelsea are good enough to win the league. They knew they had the players good enough. And maybe they think, well, you know what, actually, more than happy not to have European football.
Mm. The other thing worth noting, and the game I commentated on, probably the least sexy fixture of the weekend, was Darmstadt against Ingolstadt. The two teams promoted to the Bundesliga in 2015. First game in charge for Mike Walpurgis of Ingolstadt, because they had 2 points from 10 games, sacked their manager.
I'm just going to say,
and they won.
You're going to have to big this up.
I'm going to have to sell it.
Yeah.
Ingolstadt had 2 points in their first 10 games.
That is an awful start.
They're at Darmstadt. Here's Darmstadt playing in front of their brand new North Stand. I've got my arms out to tell the story.
Yeah, it's that big. Is it that big?
It's got about, it can hold 2,800 people and increases the capacity at the Jonathan Heimes Stadion and Ballenfalltor to 17,400. 400 additional seats.
Still 7,000 short of the yellow wall at Dortmund.
Yeah, exactly. But midway through the second half, ball into the box, pinged out to Moritz Hartmann on the volley, 25 yards out, top corner. Ingolstadt win the game, and they're up and running.
They're up and running. They're selling.
Hamburg
they
drew.
Have won the cup.
They did. They went mental. Okay, that's enough Bundesliga now, but title race on. Oh, by the way, Mats Hummels was criticised by Lothar Matthäus.
I agree with him.
Oh, okay. Let's have this out, Chris. Mats Hummels was criticised by Lothar Matthäus on TV for visiting the Dortmund dressing room before Der Klassiker. Matthäus, who very outspoken, sometimes ridiculed a pundit in Germany, said before the game the concentration should be on the match and not old friendships. Hummel said, I don't care about the criticism. It won't be shown in the highlights, but we were finding good spaces, blah, blah, blah. Chris.
So I think this is, and call me old-fashioned, I think this is a wider thing in football that I think
being
fans...
Being nice to each other? Being friends?
No, but fans don't like. Do you remember when Manchester City in their biggest game under Pep Guardiola were thumped at the Nou Camp? 4-0, was it? End of the game, they're all smiling and they're all, you know, I know they're friends, like genuinely friends. Aguero and Messi are genuinely very good friends. I think, I don't know, you can do that maybe in private in the dressing room. But I think at the end of the game there needs to be a, I'm thinking of Roy Keane. Now there's no way that Roy Keane would have been, having been beaten 4-0, would be walking around smiling and swapping
shirts. Yeah, but Keane's, you've gone too far with the example.
I accept that I went too far with Roy Keane, but I think you need to have a modicum of.
So how do you feel in the tunnel when they're all like, they know, oh, he knows him from Chile international
before
duty.
Before the game, I don't mind.
Yeah, that's Hummels. That's what Hummels did. Is before
in such a big game. I
you think no?
Of Groove Lota Mateus. I think okay. I think stick in your own dressing room and be like, no, I'm gonna beat.
What's
you.
Interesting as well was that there was a couple of times when players went down under challenges from Hummels and he tried to get. You know, pull him up or offer his hand to give, like, Schmelz at. And Schmelz was just like, in yeah, game mode, just leave me alone.
No, it needs to be like
okay,
that.
Okay, good.
You don't, you know, these great rivalries we're talking about this weekend, like in Istanbul and Madrid, they shouldn't be friendly. They shouldn't be. Once football loses that needle, they might as well all go home. Rob.
Exactly. Okay, quick one on Eredivisie before we speak to Tancredi. Tell us about this touching moment at the Feyenoord game. Chris Parrott for Tony Villegna, who scored that wonderful goal against Manchester United in the Europa League.
He did. Well, unfortunately, his mother passed away last month, and a whole stand, one of the most notorious grounds in European football in terms of the atmosphere, were given sparklers, all held them up at the same time. It was quite a picture, moving moment. And they also sang, when they were doing this, when they were singing their version of You'll Never Walk Alone. So it was a very touching moment.
Yeah, you seem to get quite choked up.
Yeah, well, I think you would. And it's when you see that, when thousands of people all do something together, whether it be at a football ground or whether it be, frankly, anywhere, it's quite moving. And it was a lovely moment for the Feyenoord supporters.
Okay, you've been sending in your highlights of the week. Stuart Overton says, although unpopular, RB Leipzig being unbeaten and top of the Bundesliga deserves a lot of credit. Staying with the Eredivisie now, Chris. Walker Porter says there can only be one highlight, and that is Dolberg for Ajax. He has been so good so far. Such a talent, perfect club to nurture. And that's because the 19-year-old scored 3 times against NAC at the weekend.
Yeah, he did. 8 goals in 12 league appearances for Ajax. They seem to have found another goal-scoring superstar. And as he mentions there, if you're going to come through, frankly, any league, actually, I think the Eredivisie, we talked about that with Richard Connolly a couple of weeks ago. In terms of youth, in terms of giving youth a chance, you're going to get game time and you're at a club that has a history, and a bit like Manchester United in this country, that there is the demand, if you like, from the supporters to give youth a chance.
Yeah, well, they have to as well, because they all end up leaving. Spotted by the same scout as Ibrahimovic. Good sign.
What's he been doing in the interim? He's probably spotted loads of great players,
He also found Eriksen.
Ah.
Yeah, so
well, he knows what he's up to.
He knows what he's doing. Okay. Let's talk Milan Derby.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
We're joined now by Italian football journalist Tancredi Palmieri. Now, Tank, I was with you yesterday morning in London and then Sunday evening you were at the Milan Derby. Very jet-setting lifestyle.
Yes, it was a very long day. We started, but I have to say, at the end of that, I was still pretty going, I felt like energy within me. I said, okay, well, something is wrong with me because I don't take any drugs, so this shouldn't be normal. Or maybe it's also because the derby was actually fantastic, very, very, very entertaining game, very lively at the end. In fact, Inter scored 1 minute to the end. Or maybe because we are blessed to do a job that that we would do anyway. So as someone wiser than me said, do a job that you like and you won't work for a single day in your life.
Very true. So Ivan Perisic, in the 92nd minute, rescued a point for Stefano Pioli. But in terms of the game, was it as good as it sounds, 2-2?
No, absolutely, absolutely. Inter at least deserved a draw. We saw one team hammering the other for now, not 90 minutes, but definitely for the whole first half and in the last and in the second part of the second half. Thing is that hammering and controlling the game or making the game wasn't exactly correspondent to the number of chances or of good chances Inter had. The thing is that Inter got a great link of their game up front, that is Icardi. Got two external two wide attacking midfielders like Candreva and Perisic, but it's too predictable their way to try to get goal. Crossing for Icardi, and Icardi by himself in the box. Even if when you are strong as Icardi, being one against four in the box, nobody can really make it. So Inter had put a lot of effort and intensity, but their ideas were too predictable to make it. That's why Milan was just controlling, staying, settling back, and making the most of their counter-attack characteristics, which is perfect because it's fitting it perfect to Suso, to Bacca, and to Niang. The two goals came exactly in that way. And Milan was almost made it. Maybe they didn't make it because they are the youngest starting 11 in Serie A. Maybe they lack a bit of experience in the end to put to sleep the game, not only by scoring a third goal, but also by frustrating Inter more with more ball possession, just putting to sleep the game. But in the end, Inter put so much effort, and there was really this huge will for the whole game that is absolutely deserved. Not always you can turn around things, turn around the table only with will and effort. That is it's a jolly that you can play a few times in a season, but you can't live on that every week.
Tancredi, we will ask you about Berlusconi and Pioli being his first game. But I want to ask you about Suso, who effectively had to prove himself at Genoa. His first goal was a beautiful technique. What have you made of Suso, and is he good enough for AC Milan?
To be honest, at the beginning I wasn't, when Suso joined Italy, at the beginning I wasn't that confident because I saw that he disappointed at Liverpool, and Spanish players not always adapt perfectly in other leagues, you know? Maybe it's a bit of a stereotype sometimes, but it's true. But he has upgraded season by season, always being efficient, tactically even. I mean, not only relying on the technical skills, which is something that you always expect from a Spanish player, but tactically has always been efficient. Even yesterday, where Milan played chess in that way, leaving the initiative and then making the most, interrupting the passing lines of Inter for the counter-attacks. And Suso, from Genoa to Milan, that are actually, yes, there is in both of them there is a three-man attacking line, but they play a bit differently, though. But from Genoa to Milan, has always adapted perfectly to what was asked to him, and never leaving uncovered the defensive phase. So being always useful for the manager. That's why manager also like him. He got a very good working rate. So the technical skills are there. And when you are able to pick that out in the important games, so basically you have all that you need, because scoring some great goals when you are not expected to do it, many players can do that. But doing it right night, in the derby, and when you have few chances, because Milan yesterday had a few chances, but made the most of the big part of them. So this is saying that you are in it. That is, you made your process to be a reliable player at a very high level.
Milan still in the Champions League places. Inter are ninth, I think. Stefano Pioli, though, so he's taken over from Frank de Boer. Do you think that's a good appointment? And I believe that Walter Samuel, a former Inter legend, is also part of his coaching staff.
I will not tell you what I said to Walter Samuel when I met him yesterday, because there is one thing. Well, I have to tell you. He play as a defender, obviously, as amateur, and Samuel was for me the absolute a model, inspiration, idol. So when I saw him, I said something that a journalist shouldn't say to a football player to not get out of his professional role. But for once, I said, who cares? Okay, nobody can see me here. But I think that Stefano Pioli is the right appointment in this moment. I mean, De Boer needed time. And he was appointed in a moment when you don't have time. It would have been good if you would have done that at the beginning of summer, not just when the Serie A is going to start. Also, for his character, he crashed a bit with some of the characters within the locker room, which probably wasn't his fault, but still wasn't bringing any good to Inter. Stefano Pioli, from that side, maybe is more diplomatic, but at the same time is more practical, even in taking decisions, tactical decisions that could suit better the moment, even if are not that close to his style. While Frank de Boer seemed wanting to go in a Dutch way, whatever would happen. Although, even if, I have to say, yesterday in the game we saw an Inter playing still like as it would be a Dutch game. So coming and going, very open, counter-attack, being exposed to counter-attacks. So probably there is lot of work to do still for Stefano Pioli. And it is hard, anyway, to cover the gap, because at the moment it's -8 from the Champions League spot, and with all those that are fighting Roma, Milan, Napoli, it's very hard to get in the middle, Lazio, to get in the middle of that. But the locker room, the team seems to be already behind him. It's even too easy to say because it's the very beginning. Anyway, having the people believing in your work is the main challenge that Stefano Pioli must win.
And Tancredi, I saw the interesting tifo choreo for Berlusconi, who they're going through with the sale of the club of AC Milan at the moment. So what is it? Are the AC Milans affectionate towards Berlusconi? Are they sad to see his era come to an end?
Well, obviously, I mean, you have to scrape off the judgment on the politician or the antics. That is another thing.
But sure.
Berlusconi came 30 years ago, exactly 30 years ago, in 86. And took a club that was one of the three historic clubs in Italy that was coming from two relegations in the last 4 years, the first two relegations of their history. And in 30 years, or make it even 20, he made it the most successful club for a couple of decades, more than Real Madrid and more than Barcelona. Maybe Real Madrid just now matched the number of Champions League that Milan won along this spell. And what you can ask more, also, it is not only about the fact that he splashed a lot of money, that he hired great players, but the fact that he arrived with a vision, on how to turn Milan and the image of Milan, image that Milan would cast on the world. And it is that is exactly what he has developed. And it is not only something about money, because it must be remembered that when Berlusconi, and everything starts obviously with Arrigo Sacchi, when Berlusconi chose Arrigo Sacchi, Sacchi was just the manager of Parma, not the glorious Parma that now everybody knows. Parma was still a second division team that has never arrived in first division. Parma met Milan in Coppa Italia, eliminated Milan, and Berlusconi fell in love with this total football manager. Observed him, and then chose him. Nobody knew Arrigo Sacchi in Serie A. Nobody, few journalists knew him very good, because it's the football of 30 years ago, so there is no internet and everything. It's very only the people that are local from them, from there, would know that manager. And so at the beginning, there was also a bit of discrimination towards Sacchi. It was something like, who this guy thinks he is? He's coming from nowhere, he has a pedigree, and he wants to teach football to us, that we are the world champion. Italy was world champion only 4 years earlier. And so everybody, the press, at the beginning, the first month, Milan wasn't performing good. Van Basten was injured, Gullit was still not adapted to Italian football. And so everybody was asking for Sacchi to be sacked. And Berlusconi stuck out his neck and said, he, with the press, but also with the team, because, you know, the players, if the players see that the club is not behind, not totally backing the manager, then their players are going wherever they want. They're just not working at the right rate. And Berlusconi stuck his neck out and said, he's the manager of Milan, he's the one I chose, he's the one that he will develop our vision. And this, from the beginning, affects what has been then the style of Milan for the decades after. So this is the greatest thing. Obviously, the trophies, but also the image that totally Berlusconi has been responsible of giving to Milan. I was in Qatar, in Doha, last week, and I met many Milan fans. And what they were talking to me about was about the Milan of Berlusconi, obviously. So that is an heritage that Milan will get from Berlusconi for decades and decades.
Absolutely. Fascinating, Tank. Great weekend for Juventus. They beat Pescara. Roma lost, so they're 7 points clear. But Moyes Keane became the first player, am I right, to play in Serie A having been born this millennium, which makes everybody feel very, very old. But that was a historic moment. And how good is this young 16-year-old?
Well, with Academy in the youth leagues, it's scoring a lot of goals. So it's something that was gonna happen, something that was gonna come. Obviously, it's always a bit of a risk to talk about someone like this. There are some things for what is his story with Juventus that reminds Pogba. Something for what are his skills that reminds Balotelli. So anyway, from whatever point of view you see it, anyway, two successful stories of two young players that debuted extremely young and made it. There is also the fact that his agent is Mino Raiola, obviously the agent of Pogba, Ibrahimovic, Mkhitaryan, Balotelli, Donnarumma. So someone that is not usually wasting time on crap players, and someone that knows how to push with press, with publicity also, his players. So there are all the details for a successful story, or at least for a successful and expensive transfer.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Tancredi Palmieri there, Chris. Delight to get him on.
Yeah, brilliant stuff.
Tancredi, please come on again. You sat back like he was telling you a story when he was talking about the history.
Well, it's the way he was talking, the way, even his Italian accent with Arrigo Sacchi, you're just like, yeah, keep going, Tank.
You're the Don. Okay, from Milan derby to Madrid. Chris, tell me about it. Ronaldo against Atletico, he ruined them.
He did. Last ever league derby at the Vicente Calderon. Atletico moving to their new stadium. Party well and truly spoiled. First Liga defeat at home in 23 games. Oh. Simeone's side just don't lose 3-0.
Was it a pretty hat-trick?
Yeah, it was enough for Ronaldo. I mean, it's never going to be aesthetically pleasing as a Messi hat-trick, but it's his 39th in 8 seasons. You know, it's preposterous. He picked Savic, had a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, saw some.
You know, kind of surprise you might say, but he's been impressive for Atletico. Mm. He picked Torres ahead of Gamero again in a big game, which I think is a discussion point. And they're now, Rob, they're 9 points behind Real Madrid Atletico. It's probably title over, given the way that Real Madrid are playing. They're 29 unbeaten.
Oh, hold up, puppy.
They're not going to haul back 9 points.
Who's? Oh, for Atletico?
For Atletico,
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry, I thought you meant the title race was over.
No. Christ. Barca are only 4 points.
Okay.
Behind.
And Barca, why are they 4 points behind?
Because they drew 0-0 at home. They were without injured Messi, suspended Suarez, and Carlos Comeni.
For Malaga,
If they were playing now, he still wouldn't. He had one of those games a goalkeeper has. He was amazing.
Malaga finished the game with 9 men, I think it was, as well, 2 red cards. And Sevilla third. Some of you have been tweeting in your highlights of the week related to this as well. Kenny McFarlane says that Ronaldo's hat-trick was one of his highlights of the week. And Sevilla's comeback win, La Liga, Gav. Happy to see Atletico drop to 6th.
Would you like?
Come on, Gav.
I know. Would you like 2 more noticeable stats?
Please,
just quickly.
Always.
Jan Oblak conceded 3 goals in a Liga match for the first time. Which goes to show just that doesn't happen for Diego Simeone. And Cristiano Ronaldo is now the all-time record goal scorer in Madrid derbies, overtaking Alfredo Di Stefano.
Ah, very good. And we've got a special guest on about Real Madrid next week. I'll tell you about that after the show, Chris.
Really? Is it Ronaldo?
No, it's not.
Oh.
It's Benzema. Chris, we're derby hopping at the moment. We'll go to the Istanbul derby in a moment. Tell us about Roman Yaramenko, the CSKA Moscow midfielder, who's been suspended for 2 years.
He has tested positive for cocaine after their Champions League match against Leverkusen in September, a match in which he scored and the reason he has a two-year ban, because I think when you first hear that, you think, cocaine, 2 years? Well, it's on the list of classified as a stimulant. Therefore, it's a performance-enhancing drug.
Okay.
Which means that, therefore, you are banned in bracket with any other performance-enhancing drug. You know,
some of the things you've been reading as well is that this can be in your system for a few days and still be detected.
Yeah, it can still be detected, and I don't think they quite know what enhancement it gives you, but as ever with drugs, once it's in that bracket, you have to be banned accordingly to any other drug which is listed as performance enhancing. So Roman Yaramenko, you know, dreadful for him, for a club, CSKA. He is one of their key players, and since he's been banned, they won at the weekend, but that was their first win in five games since basically.
Well, he was their best player.
Yeah, he was the Russian Premier League Player of the Year in 14-15 as they won the title. So, you know, for him, an awful moment, but the authorities have to take action, and they have 2 years.
2 years for Yaramenko. Okay, remember CSKA in Spurs Champions League group as well. Speaking of which, another highlight we've had in this week, and I think it was from Charlie Barca, was that Falcao is proving he's still got it.
Yeah, he's now scored five goals in his last three games. Got two in their last Champions League match.
Manchester United make a £60 million bid for informed Monaco striker Falcao.
It's a shame, though, if you speak to anybody at Manchester United or at Chelsea. It wasn't an attitude thing with Falcao as to why he didn't succeed in England. His body didn't allow him to play.
Yeah.
And that is such a shame.
Well, he came off the bench at the weekend as well. They're being careful with him, aren't they?
Yeah, he did. About inside a minute, he scored. They won Monaco. Still top of... No, not top, because Nice won on Sunday night. But Monaco going great guns. Another brilliant player, Thomas Lemar, who made his France debut, scored a belter of a free kick. They look really good. But for Falcao's point of view, you go back to that player who at Porto and then at Atletico, and he was...
I think he was the best number nine in Europe.
I spoke to Ledley King yesterday, actually, and he said he thought he was the best player, one of the best strikers in the world. And from Spurs' point of view, Falcao, as you mentioned, didn't start the game. They are taking precautions. I think he will start this week. And if he is on fire, you know, arguably he's one of the top forwards in Europe.
Sure. We're about to be kicked out of a studio, so we need the Istanbul derby between Fener and Gala in double quick time.
Fenerbahce won, and Robin van Persie scored both of their goals. Dick Advocaat.
Wow, after his eye injury.
Yep, they had the worst start in their club's history, but Dick Advocaat took over, and since they lost to Manchester United at Old Trafford, they've won every single game, including beating United in Istanbul. They look, all of a sudden, they look a top team again, and Dick Advocaat, who I swear about four times now he said he's never taking another job, can't resist it and keeps doing well. So Fenerbahce are flying, Galatasaray beaten.
Okay, that's this week's Football in Europe. Please leave us a review on iTunes. We're back on Monday. Chris, it was wonderful.
It was. Enjoy the Champions League, everybody.
You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.